This episode of the Bad Crypto Podcast is sponsored by CoinZoom. Stick around to learn more about them later in this episode. How do you develop transparent and inclusive governance and cooperation models for blockchain applications and promote regulatory convergence so that potential impact for society and the economy from these technologies is driven forward? Well, I'm glad you asked. Today, we welcome Mark Taverner of Enatba to the show, and he's going to tell us how his organization is making all that happen. Trust us, it's good stuff. The International Association for Trusted Blockchain Applications is all about facilitating trusted blockchain solutions. We, however, are ABADBA, the International Bad Boys of America. It's not the same thing at all, in any way whatsoever. So join us for some acronymal fun on this episode number 463 of TBCP. That's the Bad Crypto Podcast.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 2, ignition.
Who's bad?
And welcome to the Bad Crypto Podcast, the home for the crypto curious and the crypto serious and the crypto acronymous. How you doing, Mr. Travis Wright?
I am doing, you know, it's like, since we're this International Bad Boys of America, can I be an overlord? I want to be an overlord now. I want to wear like
You are Sir Overlord Travis Wright.
That's good. There we go. Congratulations to me.
Over your lord and boom, you're an overlord.
Boom. I wanted it. And then Mr. Sir Lord Jocom delivers.
Just Happened. Got a great interview for you guys today. I want to give a quick shout out to our friends at CoinZoom. If you want to get a debit card that allows you to spend your crypto easily, the CoinZoom Visa card is the answer. It's a true debit card that instantly converts your crypto to the fiat accepted by the merchant. Boom, like that. You just choose what crypto you want to spend, and you can use this card and spend your crypto at over 53 million merchants around the world. So you want to book a hotel? Use your CoinZoom card. Rent a car? CoinZoom Visa card. Make ATM withdrawals? CoinZoom Visa card. Buy blockchain heroes? No, can't use it for that. Wax only. But anything that you're going to use fiat currency for, you can earn up to 5% back in crypto back on every purchase using crypto instead of fiat. And you can get $10 in free crypto by going to this page. You ready? Take this down. Here you go. Badco.in/CoinZoom. Badco.in/CoinZoom. Register now. Get $10 in free crypto.
I like that. It's like, you want to book a hotel? Boom! CoinZoom. You want to rent a car? Boom! CoinZoom. There you go. It's like some Ron Popeil shit.
It's a debit card. It's easy.
Boom.
Boom. Bam. Paper towels.
Boom. CoinZoom.
Did you ever see that one on YouTube?
I think so. It's something strong memory.
Bam. Paper towels. Just clean everything up with paper towels. Speaking of cleaning up, we're going to clean up this show here with a great interview with our friend Mark Taverner. Really interesting interview. It's great to see an organization such as his that are developing standards around blockchain applications and organizations and making sure that everything is on the up and up. So let's get to our interview with the Enatba man himself, Mark Taverner. Mr. Travis Wright, do you happen to know the world's longest pronounceable real world acronym?
Off the top of the dome?
Or the bottom of the rump or
I'm
wherever
in the middle of the dome and there's nothing there. I hear an echo.
You hear an echo now?
My brain. Hello, Travis. Don't have thoughts. I don't know. What is the longest acronym?
This question was asked on a Guardian article, and I don't know that it's determined, but there is Matfo Fatusa, which is a member of the Federation of Free African Trade Unions of South Africa.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, today,
the more you know, folks.
The more you know, the more worthless information you have, the better you'll do on Jeopardy, I suppose. We have with us today Mr. Mark Taverner. He's the executive director of Enatba, which is a much shorter acronym, but fun to say. They're the International Association for Trusted Blockchain Applications. I think you need some more words and letters there, Mark.
Well, thank you, Joel. What a nice introduction. I've never been described as potentially one of the contenders for the worst acronym. Or was it longest or worst? I'm not sure quite what you said.
I think it was both.
It was longest. I'm not interested in judging your acronym. I'm just interested in the length.
We're not going to judge your acronym or your accent. We're very non-judgmental around here.
Oh, we got the accent in early, huh? Uh-huh.
The website is anatba.org. They're a Brussels nonprofit organization supporting the growth of digital ledger technology and blockchain technologies. We're going to find out how they do this, why this is important, and what they're up to today. Mark, welcome to Bad Crypto. Are you sorry you came yet?
Joel, it's very early. Thank you for having me. I can't be sorry I'm here yet because it's only been a few seconds. Ask me again in a few minutes.
Okay, very good.
Well, ask at the end of the show. We'll be like, how horrible was it? He'll be like, oh.
He won't even be here anymore. It's so horrible. He'll just walked away.
I'll be the echo.
Seriously, folks, this is going to be really interesting because Mark is very knowledgeable about the European Blockchain Center, all that's happening there. He writes about it. He speaks about it. He thinks about it. He might even eat about it. I don't know. But
well, Mark, he does live in Brussels sprouts.
You know what? We have to stop and pause just for a moment because I want to recognize that that was perhaps the worst joke of the year. I mean,
well, you did say he ate about it, and then there was.
If you're trying to end 2020 on, you know, the worst, that, like, we could just stop and end the year right there. That was horrible. Right.
Sorry. Well, his organization is in Brussels.
It was deliciously horrible.
That's good. You set it up, and I slammed it down. And people turn it off.
I think you just
now they're walking away.
Wow, that you could
they
tell.
Didn't even get to hear Mark today. That's unfortunate.
You could tell we all just woke up here. So, Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself and Anatba.
Well, listen, fun fact about me. I really don't like Brussels sprouts, but I grew up picking them out of fields to earn money to pay my way through school. Mm. So there you go. How's that about a link for you,
that
huh, Travis?
That was one hell of a segue. Thank you for saving me.
Not at all. It's my pleasure. So, Anatba, what do we do? Well, it's a pleasure to be on here and talk about what we do. We represent the DLT and blockchain industry, as most associations do, but in a rather unique way because we have governments within our membership base, almost 23 governments from around the world, together with about 43 academics from different universities around the world and 170, as of count today, 170 corporate members. And they range from the small blockchain companies doing very interesting things on, for example, custodian wallets, all the way through to the big banks such as Barclays, back out the back end to Consensus and IOTA, and then through to companies you wouldn't necessarily expect to be there, like L'Oreal, the consumer goods companies, and a few others. And we just try and make our marketplace accessible for policymakers, governments, strategists, and legislators so they can understand with a bit more accessibility what it is we do in the industry and what's important to us. And then we try and translate what's going on in governments back to those technical organizations that spend all of their energies on innovating and not really trying to understand how to interpret policy. So pretty simple stuff, really.
Mm. You know, I've always said since like 2017 that IOTA goes right out the back end. Always said that. I've been big fans of IOTA. That was my second or third lost crypto. Not sure. Maybe
you just hated their wallet. That was like you couldn't make heads or tails of the wallet.
It was an early stage of their wallet, and it gave you just a random key, and you had to connect that random key to your wallet or something, and it didn't work. And then so somebody else got my IOTA. So I have no IOTA.
I want to mark something right now, even though I don't know exactly when this interview is going to air, obviously in the future, but we're recording this on November 5th, 2020. It's 9 a.m. in the morning Mountain Time, and Bitcoin has passed $15,000. I'm currently 15,207.
Wow. So
those of you in the future, when you're listening to this, if Bitcoin's already 20, this is when it hit 15. And if it's back to 3,000, this is when it hit 15.
Mm. Well, this is that moment, right? Because like they said, if it went over 14.6 or whatever that point was, then, you know, 20,000 is the next resistance point. So we could see some pretty big boop, 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 some pretty solid gains over the next couple of days. Good stuff. So let's go back. So the European Union, so is this one of the main organizations in Europe? Because I know there's a lot of different different blockchain organizations popping up there, but you're based out of Brussels. That's the home of the EU. So it sounds to me like you guys are doing some probably some pretty interesting stuff over there.
Yes, and thank you for that descriptor, Travis. You said one of. I would say we are the largest.
Very nice.
And as well as working in Brussels, and we've got great relations with both the European Commission, which is the executive arm of the Parliament, and the Parliament. We work internationally as well. So in our membership base, we've got relationships with governments in Canada, Taiwan, across in Africa. So we're really trying to keep an eye on what's going on from a governmental and policy perspective around the world, and make sure that our members understand what's happening there. But Brussels is our home. It's where we have our office, and it's kind of where we grew up because there is so much work going on there at the moment. And I'm sure, or you may not be aware of the raft of proposed regulation that's going to create a single market across 30 countries for digital crypto assets. So for crypto assets and crypto asset service providers. There's been...
That is huge. You want to go into some more of that? Because that tells me that, wow, that could be a big driving force for adoption in Europe if 30 countries are going to adopt a single standard type of thing.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. So this proposed regulation, which is called a Markets in Crypto Assets Regulation, MiCA for short, is a piece of work that has been built within the European Commission, involving consultation with all sorts of actors, including INATBA and our members, and many, many others as well. It's taken many, many months to put together and was submitted from the Commission into Parliament on the 24th of September. So it's 170 pages of proposed regulation that will create a single market with a single set of rules, a single set of regulations, for 30 countries in Europe. So if you're a crypto asset issuer or you're a crypto asset service provider, you need to know about this, not just if you're based in those 30 countries, but if you are based elsewhere and want to trade into those 30 countries, you need to have an understanding of what eventually this regulation will turn into. So we view this as one of the most significant moments, one of the pivotal points of development in our market.
What are some of those high level, best practices then that you're putting out there that, you think regular people like us would understand?
So particularly in respect to MiCA, we're gathering opinions from our members around topics that would suggest that decentralization is something which needs to be considered in regard to this regulation, because the regulation calls for the existence of a legal entity within those 30 countries. And as we all know, and we were just talking about, a few of the coins and a few of the projects that have spawned these coins, the one of the similarities across all of them is that they are decentralized. And so, you struggle to see where the natural legal center of a particular project is, or in fact should be. And that goes to some of the very, very heart or the very essence of these projects that leverage decentralization. So we're very interested in gathering evidence from our members and bringing this market observation to the Parliament as they consider this proposed regulation that looks at this conundrum of how do you, when you regulate something, insist that it has a legal entity in one of these 30 countries, whilst recognizing that decentralization and DAOs, for example, decentralized autonomous organizations, have value and yet don't exist in any one country. So how do you reconcile those two slightly disparate positions, or do you not want to? Do you want to simply pass over that whole raft of innovation as an aggregation of 30 countries and say, we'll let the US, or we'll let China, or we'll let Africa, or we'll let some other jurisdiction just, have that part on the market?
That's a fascinating thing when you talk about it, because here is 30 countries going to come together over a single standard and regulation. Now, in some ways, I know that conspiracy theorists, they're going to go, whoa, hold on. What are they going to do? How are they going to regulate this? And a lot of people would probably say we need to deregulate or decentralize the EU, right? Because a lot of the EU people, a lot of the people who are in charge of the EU, they're not elected. They're literally placed in there by the government. So that's a problem for a lot of people, the fact that the people in the EU aren't actually elected and then making regulations around crypto. You know, that is a red flag to some people, because they're like, hey, we want to keep government's hands out of here. And what happens when they try to sort of centralize things and say these are the only crypto assets that can be used? And then what about the Bitcoin conundrum? Because there is no Bitcoin company, right? How does that, what are they going to do about that?
Yeah, super interesting, right? And that's one of the observations that we're making with the industry at the moment, is and with parliaments, with the commission, and with the various committees that are reviewing this proposed regulation. And I just want to reiterate that we think this regulation is, in large, very good, because establishing legal certainty, understanding the rules of operation, and opening up an entire market of 30 countries, that's a big win. That's a big carrot to have in front of you. And, you know, many people in this marketplace have said that a degree of regulation is going to be very helpful just to give that legal certainty. But how you reconcile decentralized autonomous organizations within that framework, that's going to take, you know, a big piece of work. It really is going to take a big piece of work, and it's going to require the building of understanding on both sides. So, you know, we in the industry understand the value of decentralized autonomous organizations. You mentioned Bitcoin. I started out way back when with a company called the Bitfury Group. So, you know, I've got an understanding of the value of decentralized organizations, the Bitcoin network, and all those things. But I've grown to understand just how hard it is to build regulation that provides certainty and allows that room for innovation. And I think that's where we are now. You know, as you look across the world, many governments, many regulators are acknowledging the existence of this technology, wanting to draw down and leverage the value of it, particularly, you know, when we talk about central bank digital currencies and all these other rafts of innovation. And so trying to understand how you build regulation that accommodates this new way of thinking, this new way of working, is really hard, because there is very little precedent right now. And as you know, a lot of law is built on precedent. And you know, frankly, using the cookie cutter approach, and, you know, dare I say it, charging a fair bit of money for it too. Apologies to all the lawyers that might be listening in.
No apologies to the lawyers, except Josh Waller. Well, sorry, Josh, but everybody else, you know, that's the deal. So, you know, breaking this down to its most basic, that means that once Mika. Yeah. Mika is implemented, then countries don't need to pass their own legislation. That's the core of what this is about. And this is great for Europe. You wrote a blog post about this on Medium, and nactba.medium.com. We'll have a link to it in our show notes. But we, you know, if you look at the U.S. and how we're lagging because of the bit license requirements that you mentioned in this article, then Kraken said, all right, by New York State, we're going to open our bank in Wyoming instead. How do we here in the U.S. and our legislators learn from, you know, from Mika, so that we can implement something that's universal across, you know, our 50 states?
Yeah, and it's a great question. So I just want to cast our minds back, if we can remember this far, some 18 months to 2 years ago. And what we saw was, you know, a huge amount of regulatory arbitrage as it related to many of the crypto asset issuers, the exchanges, and the service providers. And, you know, I was on that bandwagon at the time that was traveling around the world from place to place, touching down in oftentimes small countries who were being very nimble and creating positions in advance of the larger countries like the US that you mentioned. So, you know, these were some of the island states like Malta, like Bermuda, like Gibraltar, like Singapore. Okay, Singapore's a little larger, but it still has that nimbleness to it. And what you saw there was that there was a large amount of certainty being sought by the crypto operators. They wanted to be based in a location, in a jurisdiction where the rules were relatively clear, at least could be written down so that they could understand how to interpret them and build their operations around them, and therefore be compliant and continue to innovate without the specter of some sort of action sitting on their backs. And therefore, what you saw was a huge amount of regulatory arbitrage, which was very costly for everybody. We lost time traveling around the world. We lost a lot of money trying to recruit lawyers in places that weren't our natural jurisdictions. And it was very inefficient, really inefficient.
There was time traveling? I just heard time travel.
It felt like we were time traveling, I promise you. or maybe that was, you know, just the tiredness and the sheer amount of beer that, you know, we were drinking to celebrate the fact that we found a jurisdiction where there was a degree of certainty. Who knows? But the point I want to make there is that was a lot of not wasted time, but it was very inefficient time and a lot of investment of funds and effort had to go into that process before Europe took this position whereby it said, okay, you know, we think we're going to go ahead now and create this framework and try and push it through. And some of the larger countries in Europe, like France and Germany, have been very forward thinking in building their own regulations. So, you know, I think what the US can learn from that is that there is real value in trying to go through those hard stages of aligning the different regulatory jurisdictions, the different actors that manage and administer those jurisdictions, which is very hard to do, to get to a harmonious position or a position where you can reach consensus, if you pardon the pun. But it's worth doing because it allows you to harness innovation. It drives some inefficiency out of the market. And, generally speaking, I think it's going to be very good for the market, and the states could benefit from these applications, these next raft of potential unicorns spinning up in their backyard instead of being lured over to Singapore or Switzerland or wherever it might be.
We are not pun pardoners, just so you know. We are actually pun purveyors, so you're good with the pun.
I had listened to a few of your episodes before, so I came on pre-warned.
We're a bit silly sometimes. So I have a question around this. So does your organization, the International Association for Trusted Blockchain Applications, again, that's INATBA, INATBA.org. Do you guys do anything with the IMF or the World Bank? Do you guys have any insights into what they're doing?
Yeah, we do. So these are where the conversations happen in our government advisory body. Where I mentioned earlier, we've got these 23 governments and what I call supranational organizations, like the World Bank, like the UN, like the WTO. And we build discussions there around matters of policy that these different jurisdictions are considering in a safe environment. And then we bring our corporate members in to learn about that, to provide evidence and to kind of tinker those discussions along. So we've recently mapped the policies that we think impact all aspects of blockchain, not just finance, around the world. And we're working with our members now to drop these policy references and these background pieces of information such that within their working groups, which is how we organize in ATPA, it's broken up into 14 working groups focusing on different topics, and our members coalesce around those working groups. So we've dropped these, or starting to drop these policy maps into these work groups so that they can interpret what's going on and then call down through our government advisory body members a call for engagement on a bilateral basis to start working together to see either the direction of travel that each other are going in, or to even get to the point where they're working together and providing evidence backwards and forwards to try and create something that I wouldn't say is an end product that everyone is happy about and harmonious with, but is something that can at least facilitate the growth of an industry, because everybody benefits when an industry grows. Government does, collects taxes, it creates employment, it benefits from the innovation that comes out of it. And clearly the commercial partners, well, hopefully they make money.
So I think one of the things that terrifies folks in the crypto world is when the IMF creates its crypto, right? And it becomes mandatory, and that's the crypto that people have to use. Or now you have an organization where there's 30 countries and they are the determinant of which cryptos can be used and which ones cannot be used. And the IMF gets the preference, right? They're, you know, they have their special drawing rights thing, and they're trying to create a crypto out of that. There's some other stuff going on that. And when they can say, hey, these cryptos can no longer go through our networks, right? I think that's where people are concerned. And so what can we do to safeguard the fact that that could be a reality if it becomes too centralized of an organization, those 30 countries working together.
Yeah, look, that's a good reflection. I have less fear that that situation could be arrived at, because the situation you've just described wouldn't necessarily be solely driven by regulation. You'd kind of have to censor the internet, right?
Well, that's happening. I mean, there's people getting censored all over the place right now by big tech. I mean, if they don't like your, you know, political opinion, boom, they'll deplatform you and demonetize you and deperson you online. You're gone, right? And I mean, look at what happens with a lot of these people. It's crazy. So, I mean, yeah, that's not without the realm of possibility. And so that's why I know some people are scared of the IMF creating their own crypto and kind of going those lines. On one side, wow, it's really good for adoption. On the other side, it's like, wow, that's really, really bad potentially. So those are some of the thoughts, and would love to hear that. Yeah, it would take a lot of censorship. Well, they're working on that.
Yeah, they are working on it, you know, and I don't think so. Let's look at your example. If the IMF create their own crypto, you know, I think that'd be great. I'd be really interested in maybe getting some of that, because, you know, that'd be quite an interesting play, wouldn't it?
Well, it'd be mandatory if you have some, like, you know, the chances of it going up in value are pretty high. <It's> the IMF, right. They're the International Monetary Fund. So.
Exactly. But, you know, I can't see that a situation like that where they bring in a mandatory currency that the whole world had to use would be a practical reality. You know, I think it's more likely that you see regulation coming that outlaws potentially, or tries to outlaw certain types of cryptocurrency, or maybe certain cryptocurrencies that either aren't understood in certain jurisdictions or aren't wanted. But I don't think you get to a situation where you'd see an organization like the IMF or the World Bank or another similar organization of that stature issue its own currency and then mandate that at the expense of everything else, every other cryptocurrency, that was the only one that could be used. Because I'm not sure it would be in their interest to do it. And I don't think the global trade mechanisms would benefit from that happening right now. I mean, just have to look at the currency markets. Okay, the dollar is the currency of choice internationally, but there are plenty of places you could go where there are other currencies as well, if you want to deal in, you know, regular currencies that are very valuable also. For example, you might have guessed by the accent, I was brought up in the UK. We've got something called a British pound still. You know, I travel around with some of that in my back pocket. And even when I end up in Africa, if I don't have any of the local currency and, you know, they won't take any of my cryptos, if I pull out some UK pounds, most people know what they are. And once they give me an atrocious rate, they'll accept them. For a can of Coke, you know, what's £50 for a can of Coke between friends when you're desperate?
Right.
I encourage everybody to go take a look at enactba.org. It's spelled just like it sounds, INATBA.org. And, you know, when you look at the members here, this is a really impressive list. This is not like, you know, a little thing that's taking place. You guys from A to Z have, you know, I see T-Mobile on here, I see Consensus on here, you know, the list goes on.
I don't see bad crypto on there. I mean, you think like a large international association of trusted blockchain folks. I mean, you figure there'd be a
bad crypto. Hey, listen, there's always space for the crazy ones. That's how I got the gig.
Yeah, not only that, but you guys have a really big blockchain and AI fund over there. You guys got $100 million in the bank. And so what are you guys working on that? What's going on? I know there's, what about DeFi? Is that something you guys are working on? And then, you know, maybe what about regulatory issues around that? Because it sounds like you guys are trying to do a 30-state consortium around regulation. DeFi has to be puzzling.
DeFi is super puzzling. And, you know, DeFi is one of the big topics that we are engaging on this proposed regulation, MiCAR, with and presenting evidence to the Parliament, to the Commission, and to the Council about, because we think that the DeFi market could be partially at risk here. You know, if you can't have a decentralized organization because it doesn't have a legal center, based in, you know, one of the 30 countries, and maybe permissionless blockchains are not as well regarded as permissioned blockchains, and there are some overtures that might suggest that the regulation could be interpreted that way, then DeFi as an industry could be threatened somewhat. So what we are doing as Enatba is we've created a public task force. We're funded by a membership, but we don't want to be inhibited by that when we present evidence on this particular important piece of regulation. So we've created a public task force that anybody can join. You don't need to be a member of Enatba. You go to our website, look at task force tab, and join the public MECA task force. And by doing that, we will take the evidence that you provide us and use our platform as Enatba and our proximity to the parliament to make sure that your voice is heard and all of the representations that we're doing. This is particularly relevant for DeFi because we think DeFi is a hugely innovative part of the market. And it's something which is not yet as well considered as it could be in this proposed regulation. To your point, Travis, the fund that's available at the moment is 100 million euros. It's going to rise to a total of about 500 million euros. And it's a matched fund. So it's being driven into markets through venture houses who receive some funding from within the European Commission for projects that are exclusively blockchain and AI based. And in return for example, I don't know, say a particular project gets 10 million from the European Commission, then the venture fund will put 10 million in as well. We think that that's a wonderful way of getting some funding into the market, raising the profile and helping to support some great projects that are out there. And the final point I just want to make in relation to DeFi and MiFID, MiCA, I'm confusing my regulations, is that One of the positions within MiCA limits the raise that you could conduct using an issuance on blockchain technologies to 1 million euros over a 12-month period. And what I want to present to your listeners is if we think back to 2012-13, when Vitalik and Ethereum first knocked that project out and started rolling the thing out, the question that I have been putting to the contacts that we've got in the commission, in the parliament, is think back. If that limit of 1 million euros over a 12-month period was placed as a cap on Ethereum, would we have Ethereum as we know it now with all of the innovation that's come and all of the work that the banks and the traditional finance sector are doing on top of it?
Yeah, no, you wouldn't.
I'm not sure we would. Or would it have happened as quickly? There is some really interesting stuff when we talk about DeFi and when we talk about some of the innovative projects that are going on there. And it's more than just the funding. The funding is super interesting, and making that available and promoting that to the projects that are out there is awesome. Almost of more importance is this issue around regulation, good regulation that allows innovation and innovates in, doesn't innovate out.
I think that the DeFi is probably terrifying the banks, right? Because, you know, this thing keeps going unfettered, then, you know, banks are going to somewhat become obsolete in some ways, right? Some people are saying and calling the end of banks in 3 to 5 years potentially, because if you got decentralized loans and being able to handle all this other stuff, right? And then all you really need is a debit card that's connected to your crypto, like a CoinZoom or crypto.com, and you know, then I can access my crypto and convert it to pounds or convert it to whatever and spend it wherever. And so it's like, I think that I don't use my bank nearly as much as I've used it before. The only time I ever use my bank now is if I'm getting something sent to me or a PayPal transfer over. It's like, I'm crypto. And a lot of people will be crypto. And I think that terrifies banks. And so they want to regulate their way around it so that they don't become obsolete. And then in some ways, they're going to end up having legacy systems like maybe could potentially drag down the whole EU.
Maybe the opposite lens to look at this through is to acknowledge that there are lots of financial institutions going into crypto in a big way now. So, you know, the other thing you could present is hallelujah that, you know, the scales are falling off of the eyes and they're getting it, you know, come on in guys, you know, the price needs to go up a little further, huh?
It's kind of ironic, though, because we're all like, yay, new financial system, screw the old world financial system. And then we're like, yay, PayPal accepts crypto, right? It's just there's this schizophrenia to this whole thing, right? Because we're dualists about it. We want to do away with what has been, but we're thrilled when what's been adopts what's coming.
Exactly.
Well, Mark, we appreciate you coming on and sharing with us today. I just want to note that amongst all the different things that you guys are doing, there's also a COVID task force. And maybe just in summary, why don't you kind of give us a high level view of what that is?
Yeah, thank you for highlighting that. So right at the start of spring, when the whole COVID situation rolled out, we noticed that governments were trying to think of innovative ways to handle this pandemic. So we spun up this task force, and the idea was really simple. We asked governments to present problems that they thought technology could solve and detail what those problems were. And we asked the private sector to put forward the solution, the technologies that they had and the solutions that they think they could give. And then we just try and matchmake from there. It's really simple. So we use those relationships we've got with governments and those relationships we have with our blockchain industry. And we see if we can match a solution with a problem or a problem to a piece of tech or a problem to a company that's willing to try and build a solution for them. Simple stuff.
That's great. Mark, we appreciate it. Anatba.org, keep us posted on all that is going on with your acronymal organization, and we hope to see all these things come to fruition, and maybe our government, our federal government, and our states will be inspired to follow suit.
I certainly hope so. Thanks for having me. And the next time we come back, if you invite me again, I'll make sure we add a few letters on the end so we can truly get the world's longest acronym.
That would be awesome. We appreciate that. And thank you, Mr. Taverner, for all the work that you do. I'm glad to have you here on the show, and I'm sure people found this super interesting as we did.
Mm-hmm. I'm a taverner, too. I like to go to taverns and get drinks sometimes.
And you get the drinks. Very good. Sir Lord Travis Wright, Thanksgiving's coming up, and NFL is happening. Are the Chiefs playing?
I think the Chiefs are playing on Monday. They don't normally play on Thanksgiving. For some odd reason, I think Detroit Lions and the Dallas Cowboys have a monopoly on Thursday games for some reason.
Oh, those turkeys never get to be with their families. Well, listen, if you like to bet, then MyBookie is our new sponsor, and they say Bitcoin is the easiest way to bet and win. In fact, if you make your first deposit in Bitcoin with MyBookie, they're going to double it up to $1,000. And you can use that bonus to wager on props, parlays, and teasers all weekend long.
Wait a second. I believe that you can, they say you can double your own Bitcoin, Litecoin, and Bitcoin Cash. I think you can deposit any of those if you use the promo code BADCRYPTO.
Oh, all the things you could do there. They've got Turkey Day Free Play. It's their third annual Turkey Day Free Play. And you can bet up to $250 risk-free on the early Thanksgiving day. And it's no risk. And then there's a Black Friday boosted odds deal as well. You guys just need to go check it out. Go to mybookie.ag. It's mybookie.ag. Use promo code BADCRYPTO. Double your first Bitcoin, Litecoin, or Bitcoin Cash deposit today. And good luck.
Yeah. What's great about it is you don't have to worry about Vinny or Vito coming around and breaking your leg. You can do it all online.
Hey, what do you mean I'm not going to take the under over? I gave you a good deal here.
Yeah. You need to pay up over here.
Forget about it.
You like your
Forget
arm?
About it.
Do it.
Hey, we'd love to hear from you guys. You know, you haven't called in a while, so why not give us a call? The Bad Crypto Hotline is open 24/7. All you got to do is pick up the phone and call 708-885-9030, and you can call and do whatever you want to do. I mean, tell us to stay bad, give us your feedback, ask us a question, tell us, you know, what you think is awesome in the crypto world. It's a recording. It's always there, and we might use you on the show. 708-885-9030. Is the phone number.
You don't write anymore. You don't call us. We're like your mother. We haven't seen you since last Thanksgiving.
Speaking of, Thanksgiving's coming up this week. We're thankful for you guys. Bad news, this next week will be pushed to Friday because we'll be thankfully stuffing our face with foods and things. But we'll catch you then. Until that time, stay. Good boy. Good. Here's your treat. Stay bad.
Who's bad?
The Bad Crypto. Crypto Podcast is a production of Bad Crypto LLC. The content of the show, the videos, and the website is provided for educational, informational, and entertainment purposes only. It's not intended to be and does not constitute financial, investment, or trading advice of any kind. You shouldn't make any decisions as to finances, investing, trading, or anything else based on this information without undertaking independent due diligence and consultation with a professional financial advisor. Please understand that the trading of Bitcoins and alternative cryptocurrencies have potential risks involved. Anyone wishing to invest in any of the currencies or tokens mentioned on this podcast should first seek their own independent professional financial advisor. Okay, go get it. Go get it. Sorry, I'm talking to the dog, not you guys. You guys are good. Bad.